I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
When I had my first child 9 years ago, I had no idea how challenging breastfeeding would be. To be honest, I really didn't think about breastfeeding my entire pregnancy. That first pregnancy, all I could think about was giving birth. And that experience for me lasted about 8 hours. But breastfeeding, as new moms find out, is a lot longer than that. And first time breastfeeding, I was just completely unprepared for. I had no idea what to expect. And as evidence of that, I didn't have a pump when my son was born. So this is a decade ago, and really things were different. I had no idea that that was something I should prepare. I didn't know to put it on my registry. So I had a newborn at home. Breastfeeding was going terribly for both of us. He was losing weight and I had no clue what I was doing. So I was recommended to go get a breast pump at our hospital. It was like this industrial grade breast pump. It definitely made me feel like I was a cow getting milked. And I have to say, it helped us get over that hump at the beginning and get my milk production up and give him some breast milk to supplement with when nursing was going so poorly for us in those first few weeks. But I reflected on that experience of just the sound of the pump and that experience of being tethered to this device, and I have to wake up in the middle of the night, and it feels almost inhumane. You just feel like, is this what's become of my life? And I can laugh about it now, but 2 years ago when I had my fourth child, James, I had a different moment where I was in my kitchen, the other kids were running around, James was napping, and I was wearing my new device that I had gotten, which was the wearable Willow breast pump. And I took a picture of myself because I just felt like Wonder Woman with this massive breastplate, with this pump that you put into your bra. It's wire-free, it's almost silent, and I felt like a superhero. I could move around and build up a milk supply for my son if I needed to go out. It felt like a 180 from the pumping experience and the breastfeeding experience that I had had in new motherhood a decade earlier. There have been so many inventions and innovations in the motherhood space, not enough, but I'm really excited by all the ways that innovative women and their supporters have created products, services, and cultures that can really help not only to nourish a baby, but to support and nourish mothers. Hey, Mama, welcome to the Motherly Podcast. I am Liz Tennedy, the co-founder of Motherly, and I am a mother of four children myself. All this month, we are focusing on the theme of nourishment. The nourishment of our bodies, our souls, and our children. And today, I am so excited to be speaking with Laura Chambers, who is the CEO of Willow Pump. I love it. It's a breakthrough leak-free mobile breast pump. I'm sure you may have one or know a friend who does. It lets women pump anywhere and in any position. And some women have even run marathons while using the pump. I talked to Laura about why we need to put mothers at the center of the conversation within our culture and really bring dignity back to the breastfeeding experience. We also talked about burnout, something she has experienced multiple times in her fast-paced career and something she's worked super hard to make sure that her employees at Willow don't experience themselves. She's brought some really innovative programs to her workplace that are helping to nourish her workers. I'm really excited for you to hear about it.
Laura Chambers, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thanks, Liz. It's so lovely to be here today.
Well, I always like to ask my guests about motherhood and their own stories. I'm curious, was there something that surprised you the most about motherhood?
So I have three kids. They're 9, 7, and 3. And when I was pregnant with my first, I'm a researcher, right? So I did a ton of research. I read every book. I went to every class. I felt so prepared, right? And I, you know, I'd hear stories of mums feeling unprepared and I'd be like, that's not going to be me. Like, I've done all this work. I'm so ready. But I just remember in that first 2 weeks of motherhood, I was blown away at how much I didn't know, to the point that I actually spent some of those 2 weeks writing a guide for my friends that were pregnant to be like, this is crazy, guys. This is all the stuff I didn't know that I was completely surprised by. And I think from that very first moment of motherhood, when you don't expect the emotions of holding your baby for the first time, right through those first couple of weeks where I at least was completely unprepared for the physical changes, the emotional changes, the identity changes, the whole thing surprised me and still continues to. Mm-hmm. Even today, I'm surprised at how much I don't know and how much I'm learning. But I would say the whole thing was just a huge surprise, which is very different, right? Like, I had gone through life until that point feeling like I could prepare for stuff. And I think motherhood disavowed me of any of those notions.
I had the same experience myself. I didn't think I could prepare, and I'm not a preparer kind of person. I'm kind of a wing it person. But just the full transformation of every aspect of my being certainly was a shock. And I think now, in the 10 years since I've become a mom, our culture is getting a bit closer to just being able to talk openly about that and giving more mothers a megaphone to just normalize the transformation of motherhood.
I believe it is. I mean, apart from adolescence, I think that matrescence, the becoming of a mother, is the biggest moment of change in your life, right? Like, everything changes, and it changes during a time when you have no sleep. And I never knew what being tired was until you had children. Like, I'd never been that tired before. I remember realizing, you know, there was a point at which I thought my husband wasn't funny anymore. And my husband's very funny. So that moment where he made a really funny joke and it just wasn't funny to me, I was like, wow, okay, this is tighter than I've ever been in my life. And so you're going through this extraordinary amount of change in a time when you're just thrown for a loop, right? You don't know who you are. Your identity changes. You are exhausted. You are physically not great, like in most instances as well. And it's remarkable when you think about how much we support teenagers and families through adolescence, and then you think how little we support and talk about matrescence. It's extraordinary to me that that has happened. And I'm so glad we're starting to talk about it and to support mums and to share more about that journey with each other.
Talk about, if you can, your upbringing. I know you grew up in a small town in Australia, yeah. And you know, now you're CEO of Willow Pump, but I know you weren't really exposed to the business world. So could you help our listeners understand, who was that little girl? How did she see the world? What were her big dreams, and how you got where you are today from that small town?
Yeah, so I grew up in what I'd call country Australia. So my dad was a civil engineer. And in my first 5 or 6 years, we moved around quite a lot to little towns where he was doing engineering projects. So I was born in eastern Victoria in a tiny town called Orbost. And then we moved to Broken Hill in New South Wales, actually while Mad Max was being filmed there. So apparently there's a photo of me somewhere sitting on Mel Gibson's knee at the cast party during Mad Max. Mm. And then we ended up in Ballarat, which is a small country town. And I would say a great town to grow up in terms of really rich exposure to things like dance and theater and music, like a beautiful community, but there just no sense of what jobs could be. Growing up, you know, if you were smart, you could be a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer. Like, those were the three jobs that I'd seen. But I had a sense there might be more,
but I didn't really know what that more might be. And so when I started on my going to university and then my jobs and choices after that, a lot of what I was trying to do was just get exposure to the world. So I deliberately chose things that gave me optionality and exposure. You know, I did a commerce and an arts dual degree to see what was going on in both those worlds. I started at management consulting at McKinsey because I figured that was a great way to see a bunch of different companies and figure out what they did. And then when I moved to the US, I actually moved across for business school. I came to Stanford. And again, I just wanted to see what was there in the world. I felt like it was a whole bunch of opportunities out there, but I didn't know how to have exposure to them. Interestingly, since then, I actually host a class from my high school comes out every year, about 15 kids, and we show them around Silicon Valley. We take them to Google and to Facebook and to eBay and to little companies and to Stanford. And they go now across and do a couple of weeks study at Boston College. And so I'm working with my high school to help kids that come after me actually get a bit of a sense that, yeah, you could go overseas and you could study in different places. And there are tons of different careers out there. That's pretty hard when you don't see it in the world that you're growing up in.
I guess I'm curious, in the world that you did grow up in the world that you're leading in, and you're a mother now in California, is there anything about the parenting culture or your own upbringing in Australia that you think you might look at what's normal or considered normal in America with different eyes?
I think that's a really good question. There's a couple of different things. I think in general in Australia, mothers are more supported in the early days. So hospital stays are longer. You get a lot more support while you're in hospital. You're assigned a midwife and that midwife actually comes to your home and supports you at home. You get connected into physical parenting groups that are really, really well facilitated again by that midwife. And so that introduction to motherhood seems a lot more supported in Australia than it was here. As I became a mum, most of what I'd heard about motherhood was from my Australian friends. And I think that contributed to that huge gap that I felt. Like, I felt really alone when I became a mom and I was trying to join mother groups, but I didn't know how and I didn't feel like I belonged. And so I think that was one really big difference. It was just a much more supported journey in Australia and many other countries than it is in the US. I think we do a remarkably bad job of supporting moms in the US.
This season of the Motherly Podcast is actually all about what are we not doing to nourish mothers in that really deep and profound way that you're alluding to, like that we all need. So we're talking this month about, where is society failing? Where are people innovating and doing it really well? What do mothers actually need? How can we get there? So you recently became CEO of Willow. I have my Willow pump right here for inspiration.
Oh, awesome. There it is.
Jake is in a lot of places with me. My 2-year-old is still breastfeeding, so it's still a part of our life. But one of the parts of what it will take to nourish mothers, the sort of inverse of that, is burnout. So when we're not nourished, we're burned out. We're burned out as humans, we're burned out in parenting, we're burned out at work. I see article after article in the Wall Street Journal every day about how burned out just the average person is at the end of this pandemic. And I know you've done a lot of work personally and professionally to deal with burnout and create new approaches. So I guess I'm curious to start.
Yeah.
Can you tell a little bit about your own experience of burnout? How did you recognize when you were burned out, and how did you start to think about those experiences?
I think the first time I recognized it was when I ended up in hospital. So I will have to say I'm a chronic burner outerer, or have been historically, and not very good at looking after myself. Now that's changing, and I've done a lot of work to kind of figure out why that is and how to unpack it. But this was a significant problem. In my 20s, when I was in management consulting, I was working crazy hours. I was sort of known as that person you'd put in on the job that was a bit out of control, right? That was understaffed, going badly. That's when they would throw me in, because I'm very calm and I just sort of sort it out and get the work done. But that took a tremendous personal toll. And so I had a stomach ulcer at the age of, I don't know, 21, 22 or something. And I just didn't stop and didn't look after myself. So that was sort of the first time my body just stopped working, because it's like, we can't actually consume all of this stress that you're giving us, Laura, please stop. But after then I had many moments of it. And I think that I was not good at preventing it. I was not good at recognizing it. I've got a lot better at that over time. But what I've moved to is a place of sort of how to prevent burnout in two ways. One is how you can prevent it in the way you work, and then the other is how to prevent it just by building general resilience in yourself as a human. So in terms of the work first, if you are smart and working in a really cool job, there are two realities, right? One is that there will always be too much work to do. And the second is there'll be always be too much change that needs to happen. Those are just realities that never actually goes away. And so for most people that are energetic and high achieving and really want to do great stuff, you will always try to do all the work and you will always try to make all the change. And that's actually impossible and you will burn out. That's just a truth of the world that took me a long time to realize. Mm. But what you can do is actually adjust the way that you respond to that condition in two ways. First, in the sense that there's almost too much work to do, prioritize and then communicate. Right. I was for a long time stuck in this belief that I never could drop a ball. Like that was my mindset to work. Like other people drop balls. I'm never going to drop a ball. That's not me. I'll just get everything done. That's not actually healthy or sustainable. So what I learned to do was to prioritize what I could and couldn't get done and then communicate that to the people around me and say, hey, look, here's what I think is feasible. Do I have the right priorities or should I shift them around? And so that's a huge unlock. The other thing is, I always want to create change. I always see the opportunity. I always want to do these great things. But again, trying to do all of that is impossible. So the second thing that I do and I encourage my team to do is to embrace change, like be really open to it and enthusiastic about it, but also be realistic, right? Can we actually consume all this change right now? Or is that pace too much? And if you can do those two things, like be open to change, but be realistic about it, and then prioritize and communicate your workload, then you get to this really sustainable place where you can be a high achiever in a really kind of cool environment, but you can sustain that over a period of time. And so that's the sort of, and that takes a lot of management for your team to ensure that they know that it's safe, that they've got that psychological safety to say that they can't get everything done. And it takes a lot of kind of leadership to sort of pull back on stuff as well when you know how much could be done. But it's those two things are so important to create sustainability. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of resilience, so I've become a huge student of resilience over the past few years. I've been to leadership programs, I've read articles, I've done a ton of work on it. I think it is the most important thing that anyone, particularly really busy mums, whether or not you're at work, that you can invest in. And resilience is sort of all about building up your energy reserve so that you can deal with whatever comes your way, right? You never know what's going to blow up or what's going to be crazy. But if you invest in building up your energy reserves, then you're going to be able to kind of cope with that better. And so the very early stage of that for me was just taking note of what gave me energy and took it away. And that could be types of work, it could be humans, it could be a whole bunch of different things, and try to fill my day a little bit more with the stuff that fills my cup and a little bit less with the stuff that takes it away. That was sort of my early journey of it. But since then, you know, what I've realized is resilience can come in lots of different ways. It can be giving gratitude, it can be meditating, it can be having a supportive community and building and nurturing that community. It can be lighting a candle, right, in your office just to make it a little bit nicer.
I have one right next to me going.
Yeah, it's huge. All those little things, they don't need to be fancy, right? You don't have to train for a marathon, but exercise is important and sleep is important, right? Those are really foundational. But there's so many little tricks that you can do on a daily basis just to build up your resilience reserves. So that's a really fun. And I'm happy to talk also about how I'm trying to scale that. So I'm trying to do it individually, but I'm also trying to scale it for the people at our company as well.
I think what you're doing is so innovative, so cool. Every worker, every company needs it. So I want to talk about that in a second, but I am curious.
Yeah.
You know, you are clearly like a very ambitious, very hardworking person, woman, to the point of being sick in your early 20s. But I'm curious about how motherhood for you personally maybe reshaped the conversation or deepened your commitment to well-being and what it takes to nourish yourself. Was there a moment as a working mom where you just thought, I got to try to put this well-being program for myself together differently now that I'm a mom?
Oh gosh, multiple times. There was one moment when I was working during a long weekend fairly recently before Willow. And I don't mind working hard and I don't mind working long hours, but I was sitting there and my children were outside playing. It was a long weekend. And I was like, this work is not productive. Like I know I have to do this thing, but it is not a good thing to be doing. And it is not a helpful or productive thing to be doing. And my time's too precious. Right. And that was why I ended up looking for another job and coming to Willow was that long weekend where I'm like,
I know that my job requires me to do this thing. This thing is not worthy, right? It's just not important enough. It's not the right priority. I shouldn't be doing this. And so I think when you have a very real trade-off outside your window, like banging on the door saying, "Mom, it's a long weekend," then I think your standards get pretty high of what meaningful work is and how you want to spend your time and energy. I would say there's one element of motherhood which we haven't touched on yet, which is being a parent of a special needs kid. So my 7-year-old has very significant special needs. She has a very rare genetic disorder. She can't walk, she can't talk. She's developmentally about 12 months old. She has epilepsy, seizures, visually impaired. Like it's a really tricky bundle of stuff. And I think, you know, I've learned so much about life through her in so many different ways. But one of the things that I've really realized is, you know, when you think about what you want for your children, we have all these dreams for them, right? We're like, I want them to do well at school, and I want them to go to college, and I want them to do sports, and I want them to get married. And you have all these dreams, but with my 7-year-old, she's never going to experience any of those, right? But she's really happy, like really, really deeply happy. She's like the happiest child you'll ever meet. And that makes you realize that actually that's all that's important. Like as parents, we think we want these things for our children. What we actually want is for them to be happy. And she is happy. Mm-hmm. And the rest is actually all our other stuff that we layer on the world. And so that for me has been an incredibly profound learning, both around kind of what actually really matters, which is just sort of happiness and how we can create that for ourselves and for our teams and for our family. And then also just difference, right? I've always been a student of unconscious bias, of how people are different. But until you've had a child or been in a situation where you are very much the other, I don't think you realize what that feels like. You don't have the empathy for it. And so now I have just tremendous empathy for people who are struggling in different ways. And it might be that they are not neurotypical. It might be that they have children with special needs. It might be that they're going through a divorce. There's all these different things that we deal with as humans. And I think having been or still going through one of those in a really challenging way just makes me a lot more understanding of humans and of what might be going on and what might be tricky. And so part of what I try to do always is just think of the whole human and where they're at and what they might need so that we can support them and give them the best possible opportunity in the world that I can help out with, which is in their workplace.
You brought up such a great point, which is, you know, certainly work is a primary source of burnout for a lot of people, but the labor of motherhood and parenting, whether you're talking in particular about a special needs child or parenting in a pandemic, is there a way that you've learned to find that resilience within parenting?
I think probably all of us respond differently to different elements of parenting. Like some parts of it may give us energy and some may take it away. I would just keep note of it would be my advice. Like what are the elements that you like and what are the elements that you don't like? I had a really fascinating learning a couple of weeks ago. So we're doing this challenge at work called a Thrive Challenge. And each week we encourage people to sort of exercise in some way or make a goal around sort of work-life balance or boundaries. And then there was one week which was about do something creative every day. And I was great. I nailed all the other weeks and then it got to do something creative. And I'm like, I've lost that. I don't know what that is. I just don't know what creativity means for me anymore. And I was trying to find something in each day where I could be creative and work that in. And then, I don't know, you've got little kids. I don't know what they're into, but my 3-year-old boy loves trains right now. And so his favorite activity is to create train sets. And this is typically not very fun for me because being directed by a 3-year-old on how to push a train around a piece of wood is not super fun. But he wanted to play trains. And I'm like, cool, we'll play trains. But I was like, okay, I'm going to try and be creative in this moment. I'm going to see if I can use this 15 minutes to do that creative goal. And so I created like this really cool train track and we created this little story about a village and I was having so much fun. Like this train track, which is usually my least fun form of play with my 3-year-old, actually was super fun because I stopped parenting him and I started actually really playing with him. Like I think if you can be present in the moment, it can be extraordinarily delightful. But we as parents often elevate ourselves above the play and we direct the play or we supervise the play or we intervene in the play. We don't often just play.
But if you can find a way to just practice that, that was a huge learning for me. It was like super fun. And now when he's trying to draw me into his play, I'm like, how can I actually really join in that moment to make it more fun? So I think it's an ongoing journey. And I would say that was my biggest learning with Penelope, my 7-year-old also. When, as I mentioned before, I've always been a researcher, right? So when we found out about her condition, I was like, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to research. I'm going to find out everything there is. I'm going to contact all the families and doctors. And I got to tell you, it was miserable. I didn't find anything good. There was nothing good that I found, and there was nothing that I really felt like I could do. And I just got into this spiral of being incredibly sad and incredibly depressed about our future. I remember so vividly one day I looked across at my husband, and he was with my daughter, and he was tickling her and they were giggling. And I was so mad. Like, what a reaction, right? I was furious at them because I'm like, whoa, how can you be having fun when there's this big, heavy, sad thing hanging over us? And then I paused for a second and I noticed my reaction and I said, well, that's a really odd reaction, Laura. What's going on there? And as I realized it, I was like, well, I could try and drag them into my sad world, or I could go join them in their happy world. Well, of course, that's what I'm going to do. And so that really taught me again about just the importance of being present, right? And being in the moment and creating that happiness in the moment, particularly for things that are hard and scary. Sometimes it's good just to find a way to let go of them for a little while and be with the kids, because kids are, you know, in general, just delightful. It doesn't take long to kind of play and giggle and get happiness. It's just a matter of releasing yourself a little bit from all the shackles that we put on ourselves around parenthood and motherhood and obligations, and finding that ability just to be there with them.
It's just such a beautiful example. And I know it's almost like getting into that state of flow as well.
Yes, yes.
Because children are kind of naturally often in that state of flow and creativity. Yeah. And we resist it because we're like, we need to get to soccer practice, or you should be whatever. Let's talk a bit about Willow Pump. It is beloved, but perhaps for those who actually don't know what it is, I'm holding mine right now, but please can you share with our listeners what the Willow Pump is, where it came from.
So for anyone listening that has pumped with the traditional pumps, you know that pumping is probably the hardest part of motherhood. It certainly was for me. With my 3 kids, I wanted to get to a year breastfeeding with all of them, and pumping was a necessary part of it, right? When you go back to work, there's not really any other way around it. But I hated my pumps with a passion. I just remember that sense of overwhelming dread and sadness when I pulled them out of the shelves, and that sense of tremendous relief, but also sadness when I put them back in the shelves. There were a couple of founders that come out of a medical device incubator called ExploraMed, and they basically look at interesting medical problems and come up with great technical solutions for them. And they've done this in a whole range, everything from women's sexual wellness to heart conditions, all this type of stuff. So they're just really great inventors, and they wanted to do something for women. And so they had a number of focus groups about what devices do you use, or what do you like, and what's working, what's not working. And all that the women wanted to talk about was breast pumps. That was it. And they kept trying to brainstorm other ideas or come up with other topics. But women are like, no, these are so awful and they're so fundamentally flawed. And so the founders were like, okay, there's really clearly a problem here. So they did more research, and the stats are quite amazing. You know, about only 40% of women reach their breastfeeding goals. And pumping is a huge part of that. In fact, stress about pumping is the number 2 reason that women don't go back to work. It's a limiter. You're like, how could I possibly manage it? Now, I certainly found that, and I was one of the lucky people. About half of American women have access to a pumping room. I had that, and I had a supportive work environment. But even then, I just found it impossible. Like, how can you leave your desk 3 times a day, particularly if you're trying to travel or have all-day conferences or go to workshops? Like, it was just so hard to do. And inevitably you'd miss one session, then you might miss another, and then your supply drops, and then it's just almost impossible to come back out of that spiral. And so that was the sort of problem. And when they were like, okay, what technically is limiting? Obviously the big issue is that women and mums, who are the busiest people in the world, were being tethered to the wall for on average like 240 hours a year. That's like 5 working weeks. How did we ever think it was okay to ask mums, A, have a baby, probably have a toddler with some other kids, go back to work, and by the way, you need to spend 5 working weeks of your year tethered to a wall. Good luck with that, right? But you have to nurture your baby, and you know, you got to pump and breastfeed, all this stuff. So we were just setting mums this really impossible task. And so they looked at kind of the technical limitations of the products and said, okay, we actually want to create something that you can move in, right? Because traditional pumps, you have to be static, angled slightly forward. You can't really move in them. so that they work because they rely on gravity, and also so that they don't spill. So they were like, okay, so how do we fix this? And they created this extraordinary device. It's still the only pump that doesn't rely on gravity and is completely leak-free because the milk actually travels upwards. It creates this vacuum, there's a continuous latch, so it doesn't rely on gravity, which means you can lie completely flat, you can touch your toes, you can do yoga, and it will still work. The pumping mechanism still works. And then they also invented these really cool bags. And what's cool about the bags is that they have no air in them. So every other container for milk has air in it. If you have air and you're putting milk in, you obviously need a vent hole for the air to get out. And if there's a vent hole, then it can spill. But what they created were these bags that are airless. And so you don't need a vent hole. That means they can actually be completely spill-free and spill-proof. They are really complicated, interesting, fascinating technical devices. But really, the very simple premise is we want mums to be able to have movement, to be free, to be able to sit with their family or with their colleagues or chase after a toddler, to actually be able to move while pumping.
They fit into your bra.
They do. Yeah. So it's an all-in-one wearable. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, no tubes, no dangling bottles. It's basically like a, I don't know, sort of a, it looks almost like an egg, I guess. And then you can slide it under your bra. It just slots right on there and you can do whatever you want. We've actually even had mums run marathons while pumping, which is amazing.
And so I think one of the reasons that I was so excited to talk to you, there are many, but one of the reasons I was, is this concept of what the Willow Pump represents. And to me, it's the idea of motherhood sort of fitting into your life, instead of motherhood yes. as an off-ramp from your life that you put it, you're plugged into a wall, and this is yeah. motherhood is coming with me. I think that's a really powerful concept, and yet it's very modern. And what I find intriguing about it is in a lot of ways, it's ancient. The notion of wrapping and wearing your baby to come with you while you do your work, whether you're gardening or hunting or just going about your life as a woman in human history, motherhood has come with us. Baby wearing was one way we did it. And I do see the Willow and this wearable pump concept as a way of showing respect for mothers and the things that we all have to navigate. That's I know nice. The first time that I had it on, I was in the kitchen and I felt like, this is amazing. I felt a little bit more like myself because I wasn't yes. that plugged in. Okay, and now I'm taking a break to kind of be burdened by motherhood again, and I'm plugged into the
right.
wall.
Well, I think it's just designing for the reality of mums, right? I mean, the old pumps, they're a medical device, right? Like if you were sitting on a hospital bed static, fantastic, right? Like that'd be great. You're not doing anything else. But I mean, how, like it just blows my mind that we thought it would be okay to plug mums into a wall. I mean, we're so busy, right? And the other part that's really important, I think, and was a big element of what we care about with Willow is just dignity. Like so much of early motherhood is undignifying, right? Like you're so used to sort of protecting your body and being private about things. And all of a sudden, everyone's all up in all of your business. Strangers rub your belly and people tell you what you should do. And you've got doctors all over your body. And it's this very kind of invasive moment that you're just, again, not very prepared for. And then you have to sit there with your top off and your breasts out, you know, and you have to do that in front of your parents or go into a room and be on your own. You know, like you just sit there. I was like, am I actually just a cow? Have I just become a cow to be milked? The whole process for me was so extraordinarily undignifying. But again, with Willow, like you've got your dignity back. You can be discreet. You can kind of get about your day. That's a big piece of it. That sort of ability to move and to be physically active and present. Actually, 86% of mums said that they feel less isolated with Willow, which is so important, right? That mums can still feel like they can be with their friends and their family while pumping or their colleagues. So the dignity is a big part of it. But I also think that there's something around enabling careers too, which is critical. Now, again, for me, I was fairly lucky. I had an office with a pumping room. It was not easy by any stretch, but it was manageable. I was speaking recently to a doctor who was a pediatric NICU doctor. And she said before Willow, she didn't think she could do her job and pump. Because if you think about her world, and this really goes for anyone in a hospital, nurses, doctors, the whole lot. If you think about the world, the shifts are unpredictable. You are often paged to an emergency. You have to run there and then often do something physical, like a CPR or an assisted lift or deliver a baby, whatever it happens to be. And the idea that if you were trying to pump, right, imagine you're sitting there in the middle of a pumping session, you get paged, right? You've got two options. Either you
ignore the page and have a colleague cover, which feels awful if your calling is to help people and you're sitting there saying no, or you try to end your pumping session. It just, like, she thought she was going to have to stop pumping. And then she had Willow. And what's cool with Willow is she can be sitting there pumping, she can get paged, she can literally run where she needs to go, do some physical work. Like, she has resuscitated newborns. I've had many other doctors that have delivered babies and they're like, this is so empowering. Like, here I am providing nutrition and nourishment for my baby while bringing a new life into the world. This is like the cool, this is what motherhood should be. So enabling mums and women to achieve their full potential and giving them lift, right? Giving them, when we lift women, we lift the whole of society, and traditional pumps were just another way the women got tied down.
Perfect analogy. I'm curious, as someone leading in this space of nourishment for mothers and for their babies, of course, you know, this great dilemma we have as mothers of how are we going to nourish our baby and how much pressure we feel to do that in the early days. What else do you think it will take to nourish and honor the matrescence, this journey into motherhood and the long work, not just raising a mother, but raising a family? What else do you think we need to do? You're doing it on a corporate level, but where else do you see the need for greater support and nourishment for mothers?
Well, I think it's everywhere. We need better family policies. We need better childcare alternatives. We need more flexible corporate environments, right? The 9-to-5 day was not designed for a working mum. So as we're going back to the office, we're like, should we blow that whole concept up? Like, that just seems a little archaic. Why do that? Why do we assume that that's the right thing to do? And so I think in some ways, one of the silver linings of the pandemic is there's an opportunity to shake things up and question it. And so I encourage companies like Motherly and like Willow to really do that and to lead and to tell the story and to be brave and bold. And then hopefully others can and will follow.
Yeah. And therefore it feels more urgent than ever, I think, as we're rebuilding after the pandemic to build in this really human-centered way. I'd argue mother-centered way, because when mothers thrive, the world thrives. But when mothers suffer, you know, the world suffers. We know that too.
Yeah.
Well, Laura Chambers, thank you for your work and thank you for sharing and joining us on the Motherly podcast.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for everything you guys are doing for moms too.
Mom is still breastfeeding James and he's 2 years old. What am I doing when I breastfeed him? What is he doing when he's breastfeeding?
He's drinking your milk or he's trying to hot your boob.
Yeah, he likes to bite me and jump up and down.
Boop. Oh, oh.
Yeah. What does James say when he wants his milk?
Mommy, boobie.
Do you remember when you were breastfeeding? What do you remember?
I only, like, remember when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was in your belly and I was drinking milk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the parts, but I do remember a few parts. But I don't know if I actually did them.
When you were in my belly and you were drinking milk, what do you remember?
I think I remembered sleeping, swimming, probably sucking your blood, and drinking milk.
That's cool. Well, that's it for our show this week. Laura, thank you for joining us. And thank you for listening to our podcast this season. We have a lot of great guests coming up. I cannot wait for you to tune in. So as always, we would love it if you spread the word about the Motherly podcast right now. Text a friend, share this episode. It will really help other people discover our show. And you could also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It takes about 30 seconds. And I love reading your feedback. The Motherly podcast is produced by Jennifer Bassett with editing help from C Plane Armada. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thanks so much for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.